Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 7.
And a very good evening. I'm John Kenny, and for Hugh Cal, welcome to Game On here on 2FM. Well, Leicester City is still top of the English Premier League, folks, but can they do the improbable and actually win the league? Eamon Dunphy will join us to discuss it. The Zika virus, you've been hearing it in the news, is the big news as we head towards the Olympic Games in Rio. But is there any threat or is it just a news story? Our man in Brazil will fill us in. Wales have named their Six Nations side to face Ireland this week. We get an Irish perspective from Simon Easterby. And it's a realisation of a long-held dream for Waterford rally driver Craig Breen as he gets a crack at the World Rally Championship in 2016. We'll hear from him at the back end of the show. You can text us as usual on 51552. 51552, or you can tweet us as usual at GameOn2FM. Alan Cawley, good evening to you.
Good evening, John.
We will talk about Mark Farren in a second, but I want to play something from his former manager, Stephen Kenny, now manager at Dundalk, talking about Mark Farren. If you didn't hear this news today, the former Derry City player Mark Farren passed away today, aged 33, after a battle with cancer. The Donegal native passing away this morning. He played for Finn Harps, Monaghan United and Glenavon, but it was at Derry really that he truly shone, scoring 114 times in a prolific spell with the club. He was named the League of Ireland Player of the Year in 2005, battled illness for the last 6 years. And this was Stephen Kenny's tribute to him this afternoon.
Farren is Derry.
Oops, stop that. I'm new to this show.
Never known it because he's so understated. He was very much under the radar in everything except his finishing because he was just so prolific, you know, 114 goals in such a short career. Terrific attitude, just a great, great person to know, really brilliant around the club with young players and packed so much into a short enough career. But he really was a class act and a very special person. He was only, you know, 7 years ago, he was only 26 when he first came into my office and said, you know, that he had a brain tumour. So it's been a battle for him in that period, and he's just been showing incredible courage. One of the most understated people he ever met, just wasn't one for limelight or profile, but yet he was voted by his fellow professionals as being the best player in the country in 2005. And if you see the goals Jamie Vardy scores now, where he runs over the top with pace and takes a touch by the keeper and finishes, that was Mark's trademark. He just electric pace, he frightened defenders. Great partnership with Gary Beckett, you know, a player with touch and poise, and Mark with his electric pace, and with Kevin McHugh also, two great goal scorers. I think also great attitude. You know, Tuesday was the traditional day off then, and in on the day off, practicing, finishing all of the time. Great with younger players coming through, all James McLean and Daniel Lafferty, who are going to the Euros with Northern Ireland Republic, respectively. Steve McLaughlin, all them players playing in England, he was part of their development. You know, I think terrific pace. He was the first line of defence. You know, he really closed down every defender. You know, he worked, he was a team player, not just a penalty box striker, absolute first line of defence. And a really brilliant person. Came back, played on, the surgeon gave him the go-ahead to play on with the brain tumour. Scored the winning goal to win the first division title, then scored the FAI Cup final to win the cup, the FAI Cup. Scored penalties in the League Cup finals. Was just a prolific goal scorer and a famous hat-trick against Linfield. He specialised in hat-tricks and certainly he was a very, very special person.
Apologies for missing the start of that particular tribute from Stephen Kenny to Mark Farren, but you get the gist of it. It sounds pretty emotional there and with good reason, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, he does sound emotional because Stephen would have had a major bond with him over the years, obviously at Derry City, where they enjoyed such successful times. And I remember speaking to Stephen about 18 months ago, John. It was at the RT Sports Awards, and it was around the time when a lot of his former teammates were doing a lot of fundraising and people around the league for him. And I know in life, or especially in sport, they say managers shouldn't have favourites, but you could tell that Mark Farren was definitely one of Stephen Kenny's favourites because he was visibly emotional, even just speaking to him back then about it when he was very sick. And obviously you could hear it in his voice today as well, but spoke so well about him too, and a fantastic player. He'd echo everything that he says, Mark, and so well liked. You only have to see the outcry of emotion and social media and the messages. And sometimes you might think it's easy to do all that, you know, when someone passed away, but they were very much heartfelt and genuine. no matter who you speak to about Mark. I played against him many's a time, and he was very quiet on the pitch, almost the same as people say off the pitch.
He'd like his football style. He would kind of just drift in and out. You wouldn't see him.
You wouldn't
coming.
Even know he's there. He'd almost kind of, because I would have played in midfield, and obviously he was a centre forward, and he would have been in around that area a lot of the time. But he would have been always kind of just in and around you, and you never kind of knew he was there. But and he played in the team, Derry teams that were really, really good, strong Derry teams.
Yeah.
Like Stephen just mentioned, a couple of the players there: Gary Beckett, Kevin McHugh, players, Paddy McCourt, James McLean. When Derry were really, really strong, and he was their shining light, really the goal scorer, the record goal scorer. And he was just such a likeable fella as well, John. I think that's the big thing that everyone can take from him. And it's very, very sad news, and all thoughts go to his family and friends.
Yeah, he tried to break it in England, but it didn't quite work for him there, did it?
Yeah, well, I think he went on a couple of trials and it just didn't. But he seemed at home. Even the other clubs that he was with, he never seemed right. Derry was always his club, and he'd always associate him with Derry City. And it's just, I seen even a couple of pictures of him in Glenavon jerseys today and different things, and it just didn't look right.
You see
the ones with him in the Derry, the candy stripes, and that was always his team. And he'll be held in high regard, as I say, as the record goal scorer forever. And I even seen there's talk online now, maybe renaming the stand after him when they renovate the Brandywell. And there might be a touching tribute like that maybe in the offing. But just for the moment, I think everybody, you can see the messages, as I said, online, and how everyone felt about it. And it was very, very sad news to wake up to today.
Yeah. What kind of a person was he like off the pitch? I know he didn't play with him. I know he was quiet enough on the pitch. What was he like off the pitch? I would say he actually was quiet enough off the pitch as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, he was the same sort of character apparently off the pitch. Any of the lads I spoke to, I know Kieran Martin was very close with him from his time in Derry, and Kieran was obviously from Sligo. And I spoke to Kieran about him, especially around, I think it was around the summer of last year when they started doing the big fundraising for him. And I think this was just to prolong his life, really. You know, they raised thousands, and
yeah, he went off to Tijuana in Mexico,
and he got the treatment, and the whole League of Ireland family came together. He kind of united everyone in that time, John, because his former teammates were the ones pushing it, but everybody got behind it and got involved, as you would expect. And they raised a lot of money, and I think that prolonged his life up until now. According to Kieran and all the lads I've spoken to, he was very unassuming off the pitch as well, very quiet, very helpful, and just a genuinely nice lad.
Yeah, he seemed to fight the fight against cancer, didn't he? He's had it for a good long spell, didn't he?
Well, there was a time, I think, when he got it initially, and then he got the all clear. I remember he came back and he used to wear the helmet, like the Peter Cech kind of helmet.
Yeah.
And he was playing, he wanted to get back playing, he made a recovery, as he said, and then I think it struck again, but it was far more aggressive the second time. And I say it's just very, very sad. 33 years of age, you know, to be taken far too young, really, you know, at that age. It's very sad.
Sure. Well, Texas, if you've seen Mark Farran play, Alan obviously played against him. I've seen him down the years playing for Derry City. If you want to text your memories of Mark Farran, please do so. 51552. 51552. Or you can tweet us at GameOn2FM with us. Something's obviously more important than football, and life does go on. But Jamie Vardy scored twice as Leicester City beat Liverpool 2-0 last night to remain 3 points clear of the top of the English Premier League standings. The opener, something special. A strike from 25 yards out. Contender for goal of the season, perhaps.
Over the top. Will he find Vardy? Yes, he will. Vardy volley! Oh, yes! Oh, yes! That's goal of the season! Jamie Vardy, what a finish! Over the goalkeeper, top end! It's a goal you would expect a team who are going to win the league to score! Watch it again! Watch it again! And watch it again! That is outrageous! The Liverpool players cannot believe it! Jamie Vardy, the goal of your life. Leicester 1, Liverpool 0.
Ah, it was amazing. Amazing goal. It was fantastic. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Great goal. There were a good feeling between two. Moretz, look him, long pass. And Jamie, he ran. Look at the ball. Look at the opponent and look at the keeper. The keeper was out of the goal and he shot. Unbelievable.
What has Jamie said about the goal, the first one?
No, what he said, he's a mad. He's a madman.
Okazaki from distance tries to shoot. Pulls the body for number three. Jamie Vardy scores number three.
through. Top end. Premier League. Come and have a look. Leicester City are flying. It's Jamie Vardy. Leicester 2, Liverpool 0.
I think we were combined to win. We press a lot from the beginning to the end of the match.
And a clean sheet again.
Oh, fantastic. You know, Italian job. We are a very good group. There is a fantastic dressing room. We will fight until the end.
You've got the league scared, you know.
Yeah, we don't think about the table. We don't think about anything. We think just there is a last match. Last match is Saturday. We are very, very pleased with our fans because they support us. They are dreaming. And we are working. And then there's a good blend. They must to continue to dream and we must continue to work.
Continue to dream. Claudio Ranieri on Leicester City's win last night against Liverpool. They're still 3 points clear at the top of the English Premier League. Talk to Eamon Dunphy and more about that. Can they win the league with Alan Cawley in a second? But first, there is a couple of games on tonight in the English Premier League. Both 7:45 start. Watford against Chelsea. But Everton are at home to Newcastle United tonight. John Keith is there with us. John, what's the news from Goodison?
Well, the news is, John, that this is obviously a clash between clubs desperate for points. Both of them spend quite big in the transfer window, especially Newcastle. Although Everton's new arrival, the third most expensive player in their history, £13.5 million Senegal striker Umar Nias from Lokomotiv Moscow. He'll only have a watching brief tonight. He's waiting for a visa. He's been bought by Roberto Martinez to share the scoring onus with 19-goal Romelu Lukaku. He returns after being rested for the weekend FA Cup win at Carlisle and is looking to end a barren four-game run. But Everton are without both first-choice goalkeeper Tim Howard, who has a knee injury, Joel Robles, making his first league appearance of the season, and also missing from the team and the squad is 21-year-old, much-coveted, £50 million-rated centre-back John Stones. He's reported to be injured. For Roberto Martinez, it is 100th Premier League game in charge of Everton, who won only one of the last 10 league games, so victory really is something they really need. Newcastle, who need a win to climb out of the bottom three, have spent £80 million on players since the summer, and head coach Steve McClaren names four of his latest signings, three in the team, one in the squad. Sadio Dumbia on loan is on the bench, and we have Andros Townsend making his debut, and also playing are two of the other new arrivals, Henri Seve and Jonjo Shelvey. So it should be a cut and thrust game, both teams needing to win, John.
All right, that's John Keith there at Goodison Park. We might get an update from John just before the end of the programme to tell you if there's any goals going in. Eamon Dunphy, good evening to you.
Hi, John.
Good. Usually have you on a Monday, but it's a pleasure to have you back on a Wednesday. Alan Cawley, of course, is in studio with us. Then we were talking about Leicester City. Did you see that victory last night?
Well, I didn't see it, but I saw the goal.
Saw the goals, yeah.
It wasn't televised, but I saw the goal. It was an amazing goal, a great goal. And, you know, what they're doing is phenomenal. Their manager, Nigel Pearson, of last year, must deserve some credit. The wonder in my head is how were they almost in the championship at the end of last season? They had to perform miracles to stay in the Premier League. And more or less the same squad has got to the top of the Premier League. So it's a phenomenal achievement. And they have to be taken really seriously now and certainly respected.
Yeah, when you talk about that, Nigel Pearson just kept them up last season. And a lot of credit went to Pearson for what he did. They left the club then and Ranieri's come in. But what a transformation from a club, as you say, that was nearly in the championship to being top of the league. And now, as you say yourself, considered to be championship contenders.
Yeah, and they have a 10-point gap between the fifth them and the fifth team. So Champions League football looks on as well. For a club like Leicester, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And they haven't spent fortunes. They've obviously got good scouts, and you know whoever signed Vardy for $2 million or Mahrez for $400,000 from Le Havre, you know that's incredible. And they have felt the heat now for a while. It's not as if you know they've had an easy run. They've been top of the league for a long time, or thereabouts, first or second, right through the Christmas period. They've had a lot of games to play. It hasn't got to them, and to beat Liverpool 2-0 and very comprehensively beat them is a hell of an achievement. Now they have tough games to come. They got to play Manchester City, for example, but
and Arsenal
they
well.
have and Arsenal, they have to play them all, really, at some stage, all the big clubs. But they have a spirit in the team that, you know, money can't buy. Their attitude is great. And a lot of them are journeymen, you know, really. And I don't use that word disrespectfully. I was one myself, and I know how great a journeyman is. But they are players who've been in the Championship and still have, you know, risen to the challenge of the Premier League. And I think it's great for soccer. People say it's a non-vintage year, and it sure is as far as the big clubs are concerned. But you still got to go out and win matches. And in the case of Vardy, who's 28 now, I mean, he broke the goal scoring record. I think it's 10 successive goals in the Premier League. Now, that's amazing.
11, but anyway, yeah. Let's not split hairs.
No, sorry?
11, I think it's 11, it? But I don't want to split hairs.
So. No, it's absolutely important that we get the facts right. But to do that, you know, is really mind-boggling when you think of all the great strikers who played in the Premier League in great teams.
Yeah. Speaking of journeyman, Cawley?
Less of that, John.
Well, nothing wrong with journeyman, John.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Oh, sure, I'm one myself, for God's sake, but not quite in your business.
Say that, John.
As I always tell everyone, it's a short career, so I wanted to check out all the clubs to see what they're like.
what do you think of Leicester?
It's phenomenal, really, John. Like, we've written them off all year, and here we are now, the first week of February, and there they are at the top of the league still, and everybody predicted and everybody envisaged that come the Christmas period, the hectic period really in English football, that they would fall away with a small squad. And here they are, and they haven't. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. And the key point for me in what Eamon said is that they have serious momentum with them now, and the attitude, you see them in every match, they're literally bursting their balls for everything, you know, and they're playing for the manager, they're playing for each other. I think Danny Drinkwater was interviewed after the match last night, and that was the one thing he touched on, is that they believe, they really do believe, John, and there's only 14 games to go now. And when you have momentum with you like that, and you have two players like Vardy and Mahrez playing in the form that they're playing, because they did go through a sticky patch. I think Vardy didn't score for 6 matches, and I actually thought that could be him now.
Yeah.
But he's bounced back, and I think he scored in the last 2 or 3.
The remarkable thing about Vardy is they're talking about tying him up for a new contract, and there's other clubs obviously out there will be snapping to get him, but he wants to stay at Leicester.
Yeah, and I suppose they'll have to kind of up his wages, probably treble them, I'd say, if they want to keep him, because as you said, there'll be plenty of people that will want to take him.
Well, I mean, whatever about win the league, which would be a credible performance from them. As Eamon said, a top four position to get into the Champions League, that'll be money well spent if they keep Vardy.
Definitely, yeah, because I think is it 10 points they're clear now of the fifth position?
So you
would have to say they're in with an unbelievable opportunity getting top four. And even around the Christmas time, I thought they would have a chance of the top four. I didn't think they'd win the league. But here we are now, as I say, with 14 games to go, John. And they're serious, serious contenders. You can't rule them out now at this stage.
Who's going to catch them, Eamon?
Well, Manchester City have the players in the team, attacking players anyway. But it's a bit of a shambles at the Etihad. They're not trying a leg. And when Guardiola gets there, the first question he needs to ask the boys in charge is, who bought this lot of rubbish for that kind of money? And when they answer that, he might have a big clear out. The City with Aguero and Silva, you know, and Sterling, really outstanding attacking players, certainly Aguero and Silva, they have to be a big danger to Leicester. They don't have any of the qualities that you really would admire. They're just a group of, you know, bandits, really. Arsenal didn't do it again last night.
Three games without a goal.
Yeah, they have key players missing, John. You know,
yeah,
they have
players to come back, all right, yeah.
Yeah, they have. I mean, Carthola will have to come back, Wiltshire, Welbeck as well, but they're not near to coming back. I was talking to Liam Brady the other day, and he said, no, they're not ready yet. So
the clock is ticking there, isn't it?
The clock is ticking, yeah. I thought, that's the other thing about Leicester. If they have to deal with an injury crisis, but they haven't had one. If they had to deal with, say, Vardy or Mahrez got injured, but they have like guys like Robert Huth playing centre-half. He's been around the block, played for Stoke. Marshall, who plays alongside him. These guys are, you would think, virtually championship players, but they have a quality that I think everyone who plays sports will understand, and that's the spirit and camaraderie that a group of guys can get. And it's priceless. It's really one of the most noble and virtuous things in sport. And they're making it work in the toughest, you know, one of the toughest leagues in the world. So it's brilliant. I mean, Arsenal and City, Manchester United and Chelsea should all be, you know, looking deep into their souls when they see Leicester and what Leicester have achieved with the players they've got. And the other thing worth noting, I'm sure Alan and yourself would agree, Ranieri got the sack from the Greek national when they were beaten at home by the Faroe Islands, 1-0.
Yeah.
Now, that's a bit of a renaissance as well, because Ranieri's been around a long time, but it seems as if he went there, looked at the lads, and said, I'm not going to mess with this, guys, and maybe introduced some discipline or fitness training or whatever it is, but he was wise enough, shall we say, to let them alone and let them play. He deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody's just texted in, please aim and don't tip them.
Yeah, he hello. Was he was, have a look at my bookie. He's driving around on a bike.
He was definitely very clever in that, John, because the run that they were on towards the end of last season, and for him to come in, and he hasn't really changed anything. I seen Kasper Schmeichel interviewed a few weeks ago, and he basically said he's just picked up from where Pearson left off.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's doing other bits and bobs around him, but they're certainly all playing for him, and you only have to look at the effort and the endeavour to play with.
They remind me a little bit, if you don't mind me interjecting, of the United team around the 90s when they had the Giggs and Cantona of this world and Kanchelskis and Schmeichel in goal, Schmeichel's dad obviously from Leicester, breaking quickly, getting the ball upfield as fast as they possibly can and breaking from the back. And Leicester seem to be copying that idea.
They do play with intensity. And I
now
think
you need the players obviously to carry it off.
I don't think they have the quality as them players that you said, to be honest with you, John, but they certainly
it's variation on the theme.
Yeah, but they certainly play with the intensity levels that the Man United play with and how quickly they break. A huge advantage in soccer nowadays is anyone with pace, and Vardy certainly has that, loves to play on the shoulder. You only have to look at his goal last night. As soon as Mahrez cut inside on his left foot, he was gone, and he causes all sorts of trouble. He occupies defenders. You see a lot of games now where there's only one up front, but he's capable of playing that role because he's so quick. He chases lost causes. He's a real typical kind of non-league player as such. He plays with all them qualities of a non-league player that would chase things into corners, hound defenders, but he's doing it at the highest level of them all, so you'd have to take your hat off to him. But
yeah, that's one of the things, John, I think that's so wonderful about this story, is that there's two things that everyone who plays sport at any level has to believe. One is that you've got a chance, no matter how, you know, how other people regard you or how limited people think you are, you've really got a chance. And the other thing is that if a group of people set their mind on something, it can be achieved. So, you know, sport allows you to dream, and sport allows you to go an awful long way if you go out and sweat, you know, every week, work. And Vardy was in the wilderness of soccer for a very, very long time. Apparently he's a bit of a lad. He's got issues, as they say. But he's a good lad, smashing lad. Maybe earlier in his career he wasn't as dedicated as he might have been, or whatever it was, you know. But these are great things, because they're what the lads who play the game. I mean, football is only as good as its grassroots, the people who go out every week and play. And these lads can relate to Leicester, and I can relate to them, and I'm sure Alan can. Mm. You wouldn't. You're a star, John. But we are journeymen at heart, and I dedicated my first book, Only a Game, to the journeyman, because it's such a wonderful thing to be in life. You're normal. You're like everyone else. You try, you try, you try, and you believe someday your number will come up, and that's what's happened for these lads.
Also
for the Leicester fans, who are brilliant.
It's the anniversary of your book, by the way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I didn't mention it for that reason. It's just that I believe in it so much that I didn't dedicate it to my mum and dad or my brother, which you normally do with a book if you write one, the first one anyway. I dedicated it to the good pro, who can be at any level. And, you know, that poor lad in Derry who died and passed away,
yeah,
you know, in his early 30s, 33. I mean, he'd be a great pro. And these are the really important and inspiring figures in sport, I think. And I've always believed that. And to see Leicester doing what they're doing, it puts the Yaya Touré's and the other guys in some perspective, who are getting a quarter of a million a week, netto, as they say, and can't behave themselves.
Yeah. A couple of texts in here. Somebody's agreeing with me. I'd agree with John to a certain degree. Leicester City remind me of the United team that won the first championship under Ferguson with players like Sharp, McClair and Parker. Thank you very much for that. One other one, which I think is of interest as well. Will Vardy, lads, be the main striker for England this summer? That's a good question.
I don't think so, no, John. Harry Kane is around at the moment and we spoke about him many times on the show. How Man United didn't sign him in the summer, I'll never, ever understand, John, because this fella is the real deal. And I think he'll start up front. And to be fair to Rooney, the form that he's in the last few weeks, I still think they'll go with Rooney and Vardy maybe as an impact sub. And I think it's worth mentioning Spurs in the chat about the top of the league as well, because they're flying. They have a player called Dele Alli, as we all know, John, as well, as in great form. And I really like what Pochettino has done there. There's a lot of young English lads, but Kane is obviously firing them towards, who knows, maybe winning the league, especially when you look at City. I watched the highlights last night and they struggled again against Sunderland. And the way Arsenal, I definitely think there's a soft centre ingrained in Arsenal, because every time we come to this point, and that's the one thing that Leicester have in their favour, there's no pressure on them whatsoever,
no,
John,
no.
Because no one expects them to win the league. So they're playing with no pressure, no fear, and whatever they get is a bonus. Whereas Arsenal, you're looking at the way the league has panned out, they'll never have a better chance of winning the league than the way it is this year. And they're stumbling again, as they always do around this time of the season.
All right. Eamon, listen, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
And your book has been relaunched?
It is, yes. It's the 40th anniversary. For any book to be in print 40 years is actually exceptional. So I think Penguin are trying to...
And my book came out in 2007. I think it's been well pulped at this
brilliant.
Stage.
40 years. Congratulations, Eamon.
I'm very pleased.
I bet you are.
Simple little book. And it's still in print, which is good, you know.
Yeah. Congratulations. For
and it was written
40 years ago.
By a journeyman for journeymen. Don't you read it, John. You're
of course,
a star.
Of course I've read it. Don't be silly. Eamon, listen, thanks for joining. Pleasure as always.
See you. My pleasure.
Cheers.
Bye.
That's Eamon Dunphy there. This is Game On 2FM. A couple of texts come in. Have you still got the Liverpool docket? Eamon has won. It's time
never
for,
let that
for Eamon to lead humble by. Leicester now 50 points. Don't see why they can't get to 60 after the next four games. That's from Des in Galway. So anyway, keep your texts coming in. One or two others I did mention at the top of the programme. We'd like to hear about your tributes to the late Mark Farren, who unfortunately passed away today. If it gets to the stage that Derry should have a stand named after Mark Farren, it will be an achievement in itself and a fitting tribute, I think, here to that. And a lovely tribute from Stephen Kenny to Mark Farren, a great talent. Rest in peace from Senan in County Sligo. We're going to talk about the Olympic Games, the Zika threat, after these.
Do it! Play that again! It's the sound. Open Nation. 2F.
Anyway, welcome back to Game On. I'm John Kenny. We're here right through till just before 8 o'clock tonight. Keep your texts coming in. There's been great response tonight to our texts. 51552, that's 51552. Or, of course, the alternative is Twitter at Game On 2FM. That's at Game On 2FM. Now, Brazilian authority says there's no risk to athletes and spectators except pregnant women when the Rio Olympic Games take place in August.
Live across Ireland.
This is 2FM News.
The HSE has confirmed this evening that two suspected cases of the Zika virus are being investigated here. If confirmed, they would be the first cases in Ireland of the mosquito-borne disease that has been linked to thousands of birth defects in Brazil.
Eileen Dunn with that news report. The World Health Organization declared the Zika virus a global public health emergency that puts it in the same category of importance as the Ebola virus. Well, what is the Zika virus? It's carried by mosquitoes, has been linked to thousands of babies being born with underdeveloped brains. There's been about 4,000 reported cases in Brazil alone since October. No vaccine or medication to stop Zika at this stage. The only way to avoid catching it is to avoid being bitten by the mosquitoes that transmit the infection. Well, I've been speaking to our man out in Rio, Pat Fitzgerald. I put it to him first that it was right and proper that the World Health Organization declare the Zika virus a global public health emergency.
I think they absolutely they had to, in a way, because number one, of the huge spread of it. I mean, it's spreading like wildfire here with 4,000 cases, not of Zika, but of microcephaly, which is the deformity caused in babies when pregnant women are infected with the Zika virus. So it's been spreading like wildfire here in Brazil. But also, I think the WHO and the CDC did the right thing because of how little is known about the virus. I mean, they suspect the link between Zika and microcephaly exists and is more than a coincidence, but nothing is proven yet. And it is also suspected that it's linked to a syndrome called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And as they haven't proved any of these links yet, then they have to, I guess, err on the side of caution and declare an emergency.
It is, though, in pregnant women where the major concern is, isn't it, in concern with this virus?
Yes, the Zika virus itself is actually quite mild. In 80% of cases, there is no symptoms at all that present themselves. Normally, it's akin to dengue. You might get pains in your bones, a fever, flu-like symptoms, etc. But when pregnant women attract this virus, it can be passed to their kids. And this causes, as I said earlier, shrunken heads, cognitive deformities, and is absolutely terrifying for women here in Brazil and indeed all over the world if it spreads that far. And it's a really, really difficult time here in Brazil, and it couldn't have come at a worse time, of course, with the Olympics on the doorstep.
Yeah, and the Olympics is the main focal point. Is going to be happening in Brazil this year. What's the authorities doing there to try and eradicate the Zika virus?
Well, basically, they've started to deploy the army. There's been a couple of 100,000 army on the streets, mainly in the northeast of Brazil, and they've been going door to door with health workers, advising them on the risks and trying to eradicate the pools of standing water. They have also, as probably people have seen in the media, images of guys with insecticide and fully suited up in protective clothing, spraying insecticides and stuff to eliminate the Zika carrying mosquitoes. This is really piecemeal. I mean, it's almost impossible to eradicate every mosquito in Brazil. It's almost impossible to eradicate every pool or puddle of standing water. I mean, I walked down the street here just by my house this morning, and I counted 16 pools of standing water in a street less than 200 metres long. And, of course, later on this week, we have a huge event here in Rio when the Carnival kicks off. And people are very, very worried here that that the Carnival will exacerbate the spread of it even more further. And, of course, all of this comes on top of the fact that the Brazil government is currently broke and the health system is straining to the point of breaking. There was even allegations doing the rounds a few weeks ago before this crisis started that lead politicians were holding back medicines from hospitals and clinics here in Brazil for the Olympics to avoid an international incident. But unfortunately, this Zika thing has reared, and this has now taken precedence over everything. And President Dilma, despite not having the funds to run the country, has promised unlimited funds to fight Zika. It remains to be seen if she can do it.
Yeah, there is talk as well that Zika can be transmitted through sexual contact with another person. That's a worrying extension of this, escalation of this. Plus the fact that you're living in an area which is predominantly a Catholic country as well, where contraception is frowned upon by the Catholic hierarchy. So that's a concern now as well, isn't it?
For sure. I mean, just yesterday, I think it was the second ever case of sexually transmitted Zika was recorded in the USA in Texas, I believe, and it was from somebody who was traveling in this region and traveled back. This is a huge worry. Before this, it was just sort of confined to women. Of course, every child has a father too, so everyone would be terrified. But now it's a real concern for Olympics and for travellers. Somebody comes here, gets an innocuous-looking mosquito bite, travels home, has sexual relations with their partners, their wives, etc. And who knows what this could lead to. As well as this, in Brazil, there has been calls to loosen the very tight abortion laws which exist here to allow women to have abortions in cases of suspected Zika and microcephaly. So when you hear the likes of International Olympic Committee spokesman Mario Andrade playing it down and putting a positive spin on it, I don't really know how we can do this, because we're all ignorant to the properties of this disease and the properties of this condition.
Yeah, you're on the ground there, Pat.
It really is worrying.
Yeah, you're on the ground there, Pat. Is this a media frenzy, or do you think it's actually the threat is real?
The threat is real. As regards Rio, it has to be said that most of the cases, there's been about 150 cases here in Rio. Most of the other 4,000 cases are in the northeast of the country, which is pretty far away. But there has been cases recorded, and it only came to Brazil in 2014 initially, and it only started to manifest itself last October, and it's absolutely spread like wildfire in the northeast throughout some huge states up there, such as Pernambuco and say that. So people here are really, really worried that it will travel en masse down here. We don't actually know. So it might be a bit of media hysteria. We might be overplaying all of this. But on the other hand, it could be very serious. And with events like the Olympics thrown into the middle of it, that would have to be seen as a catalyst for possibly spreading this disease, this virus, whatever you want to call it, worldwide.
Yeah, international Olympic committees across the world say they're monitoring this particular virus. What's your gut feeling, Pat? Do you think there is any threat to the Olympic Games?
Personally, I don't think there's a threat to the Olympic Games. I think the Olympic Games will go ahead. If I was a female athlete, I would be very concerned about coming here. I read recently that in the last Olympics there was two or three female athletes who were pregnant during the Olympics. So coming to a place like Brazil, especially for women, is highly dangerous. And I think a lot of countries such as Australia have expressed warnings to their athletes that they may need to think about their participation. The one positive is that the Olympics will occur in wintertime, which may help the situation, as the mosquitoes don't thrive so much in the colder climate. But who knows what damage will be done by then. I think the Olympics will definitely go ahead, but it will cause a lot of disruption for ticket sales, which are down already, people travelling here, and even the athletes themselves.
It'd be a disaster for Brazil, wouldn't it? Because you mentioned already in this interview the fact that it's a Brazilian government that are broke. They spent a lot of money on the World Cup a couple of years ago. They're spending billions again in a poor region on the Olympic Games. If ticket sales are down, this Zika virus could be very, very problematical, to say the least, for Brazil.
Well, as I say, this would be a disaster for Brazil. It would be a disaster worldwide if it starts to spread. But with regards to the Olympics, with Brazilians on the ground, the Olympics are well down the pecking order for Brazilians. Ordinary Joe Brazilian doesn't really care about the Olympics. They have far bigger fish to fry at the moment. They've got hungry children to feed. They've got unemployment. They've got poor health services. The country is basically in economic, political, and even environmental turmoil at the moment. And this is really just another... This could finally be the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. And it remains to be seen what the government efforts can achieve, going door to door and spraying insecticide. I really think that the answer and the solution to this lies at the door of the scientists. Unfortunately, scientists have said that vaccines will not be available at least until 2017, maybe even 2018 at the earliest, and that will not be in time to save the Olympic Games from a potentially widespread Zika spread. And I just hope that this can play down when the seasons change and the climate gets a little colder. But for now, it's a huge worry for the Olympics. It's a huge worry for Rio. And hopefully something can happen to save the day. But for now, it's a huge concern to everybody travelling here.
Yeah, it's a personal question. But do you know anybody who has the Zika virus?
I don't know anybody personally who's had the Zika virus. But there has been numerous cases here in Rio of the Zika virus. Only a few have turned into microcephaly. I don't know anyone personally, but I'm sitting here at the moment swatting away mosquitoes to beat the band. They're everywhere here. So, I mean, the fear is real. The tension on the ground here in Rio de Janeiro is very real. And it will continue to be so until some kind of cure is found.
Pat Fitzgerald from Rio, thanks for joining us here on Game On.
Cheers, John.
As Pat Fitzgerald recorded a little bit earlier on today, I'm going to Rio. Better bring my mosquito repellent with me, apparently. Yeah.
You'll be well prepared.
No doubt
about that.
In that interview, I was actually getting to try and play it down. Well, I wasn't actually... I was kind of asking the questions, you know, sometimes with these things, with SARS and whatever, they can build up to something and just get the fear in people that doesn't necessarily follow through. But he just wasn't playing it down at all, was he?
He wasn't, to be fair to him. But as you said, John, yeah, the kind of scaremongering does go on. But if it's something as serious as that, he can't play it down, really, when you're obviously it's big, such an event, and the amount of people that's going to be over there around that time as well. And if it's as serious as they're making out, well, then you can never take too many chances, ever.
Sure. If you're going to Rio, let us know. Text us, 51552. Will you go now as a spectator with the knowledge that the Zika virus is out there? Let us know, 51552. Send us your text in or at Game On 2FM is our Twitter handle. Now, on to rugby. Wales have named their team to face Ireland at the Aviva Stadium this weekend. Cardiff Blues winger Tom James will make his first Wales appearance for more than 5 years on Sunday. Head coach Warren Gatland's also handed starts to Cardiff's fullback Gareth Anscombe, Scarlett's prop Roy Evans, and flanker from Ospreys Justin Tuperick. Wales captain Sam Warburton moves from outside to blindside flanker. Centre Jonathan Mullins, who missed the World Cup last autumn because of a knee injury, is reunited in midfield with Jamie Roberts. Now, Michael Cork is going to be speaking to the ex-Irish international Simon Easterby, the forwards coach for Ireland's rugby union team. He was ensconced in Wales at one stage. He's looking forward to Ireland's opening Six Nations clash this weekend.
I think it's the first game. It would always hold probably a special place for me. I'm having spent a lot of time in the Principality in Wales. But, for us, it's the most important game because it's the next game. It's the first game of the championship, the first time we're able to get out and play together since we lost out on the quarterfinal in the World Cup. So there's lots of things that make it a special occasion, and hopefully we can start the championship, start the defence of our Six Nations title off with a good performance.
A long time between matches, a long time to stew.
A long time, more for coaches and players, because they obviously get the chance to go back to their provinces and clubs and take out a bit of that frustration on fellow players. But we've had time to reflect, time to look at how we can do things better from what we did against Argentina. We came off the back of a really good result against France and performance against France, and then our standards in certain areas slipped against Argentina, and we came away second best on the day, and we've got no excuses for that. What we can do is look to try and rectify a few of those issues that we had that day and hopefully put those into practice on Sunday.
How important is it that you concentrate on the players who are here as distinct from people who are not here through injury or retirement?
It's vital that you can only work with what you have to work with, and we've been really impressed with a few of the guys that are coming into the squad for the first time. There's a real competitive edge to training. We've been together last week with no game, and now this week in prep for the Welsh test. So I think there's a real competition for place at the moment. We've turned over a new page. We're into a new Six Nations. We still have the opportunity to create some history. But there's also some new players coming in and putting their hand up, and they've done that over the last few months for their provinces. And I think that shows in some of the selections in the squad.
I'm sure that Warren Gatland and the rest of the Welsh coaches will have looked at this game and will look at who's available for Ireland and think, something, I fancy this one. I mean, what can they expect from Ireland on Sunday?
Yeah, obviously he and the rest of the Welsh coaches will have an opinion on who we select and who they feel that they can, or how they can get an upper hand in the game. We've worked really hard on certain elements of the game, like I said, since our last performance, which is what we probably have to work off first and foremost, is how we can rectify some of the things that we didn't get right against Argentina. We created some opportunities which we didn't finish off. We allowed Argentina some opportunities which we weren't able to stop. So across the board, both sides of the ball, attack and defence, there's areas that we saw after the Argentina match that we needed to improve on, and we feel like we've had the opportunity over the last couple of weeks to do that, and we'd like to think come Sunday that we can put those things into practice and make sure that we don't give those sort of things that we gave Argentina, and make sure when we do create the opportunities, which we're capable of doing, that we actually take those chances.
I know the players will drop in and drop out all of the time in terms of match preparation. I saw Gary Ringrose and Jordy Murphy are training today. Sean O'Brien didn't train. Any reason for that?
I mean, Gary coming in, we haven't replaced Luke Fitzgerald in the original squad, so Gary's come in for a bit of cover there. And he's already been in the squad already. And Jordy's come in to cover for Shawnee. He just pulled up yesterday a little bit tight and just felt it was prudent not to train him today in light of what we've got coming up on the weekend. So the lads have got a down day tomorrow. They have a chance to recover after a good couple of days together, and it's important that we don't throw players in to training if we feel a day of recovery we'll see them right by the weekend. So it's more a prudent thing with Shawnee, and like I said, Gary coming in to probably cover the back line with Luke Fitzgerald unfortunately getting injured last Friday.
And an exciting roller coaster 6 or 7 weeks ahead.
It always is. Six Nations is it's the best competition. I feel it's different to the Rugby World Cup. Yeah. It happens really quickly. It's kind of upon us, and then before you know it, you're 3 games in, and then before you know it, you're at the last game, and you know, if we could produce some of the sort of rugby that we produced last season, then and we get to the final day with it all in our grasp, then we'll be in a good place, and hopefully that'll be the case. And we kick off well on Sunday with a good performance against the Welsh.
Let's hope so. That's Simon Easterby speaking there with Michael Corcoran, and full comprehensive coverage of the RBS Six Nations across all our platforms and radio, online and live and exclusive on RTE television and radio as well. You'll be watching Sunday, will you?
I will. I'm looking forward to the Six Nations, John. Yeah, it's probably the only time of year where I do tune into the rugby, I have to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, but it's a great tournament and I'll be cheering them on. But I think from what I'm hearing from Mr. Hugh Cahill here every night of the week and from all the rugby experts, they're coming in under a bit of a cloud this year, so it'll be tough. And
injury
Wales, tough start as well.
Yeah, talk about O'Brien not being available for the first game as well. So.
Tough start, but hopefully they can do very well, but I think they have a tough start ahead of them.
Oh, sure. Okay. As I said, full comprehensive coverage here on RTÉ Radio. And finally tonight, we're going to talk a bit of motorsport. Craig Breen's continuation of his desire to make it to the pinnacle of world motorsport has moved up several gears. The announcement that he's to form part of a three-team assault on next week's Rally Sweden with the Abu Dhabi Total World Rally Team. He's from Waterford. He's won the WRC Academy Series and the SWRC in 2012 before he joined the Peugeot Rally Academy in 2013. He should really have won the European Rally Championships either last year or in 2014, but he didn't. And I began by asking him, did he have any regrets about not winning that European title?
I suppose so. Look, at the goal was when we went to the European Championship, it was a bit of a sidestep. We had won the Junior World Championship, the Super 1000 World Championship, and it was a little bit of a sidestep, but it was the only path that was available to us at that point. And of course, the goal was to try and win it rather quickly, and, you know, try and get myself back into the World Championship. And yeah, you know, we perhaps went further down that path than we wanted, but they were just the cards that were dealt to me, and okay, we didn't end up winning it, but I've got myself back, you know, on the right track again now. So, yeah, no regrets. You know, that was, like I said, the path that was laid out, and we tried to do the best we could.
You signed up with the Abu Dhabi Citroën team. It's not the full works team, as we know, because Citroën are taking a step back from the World Rally Championship for just 1 year. They're back next year, but from your point of view, this is an incredibly exciting opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, this is what I've dreamed of since I was a kid, was to try and have a proper drive in the World Championship, in the World Rally Car. So we've worked really, really hard to get to this position. You know, since I started rallying, this has always been, I won't say the main goal, but this is one of the stepping stones along the way. So now I've got myself into a great team with a great car. Like you said, you know, it's not the full factory outfit like it has been in previous years, but, you know, a lot of the personnel are there. The car is a proven winner. And, I just can't wait to get started now.
Yeah, Chris Meek drove a version of it last week in Monte Carlo, and he was going great guns until he was knocked out on the second day. But, you know, the car has got some kind of pedigree.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's going from the factory where, you know, a nine-time world champion was working. So, for sure,
that's Sebastian Loeb, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely got the pedigree, and, you know, the car is a proven winner. I think Sebastian won, those are two or three of his world titles in the DS3 as well. So it's definitely a proven car. Like I said, the team, okay, it's PH Sport, which is a private team that's running the outfit, but still some of the personnel are involved in the program, and you know, it's great to be involved with people with such wealth of experience. With a proven winner like Sebastian Loeb, and they have been working with Chris as well over the last couple of years, so it's a little bit surreal even for me at the minute just to be part of the whole thing.
Absolutely. How did it come about, Craig?
I suppose over the last couple, last year mainly, we pushed to try and get back into the World Championship, and we managed to get the program to do some rounds of RC2. In fact, we've done a full campaign, although we didn't really get as much mileage as we would have hoped. A lot of mechanical problems put us out of the event, sometimes as early as the first stage of the event. So, but I tried to, you know, focus on our stage times and our split times when the car was running well and when we were in a good rhythm. And, you know, I kind of put this information in front of, you know, a lot of the team bosses, and, you know, tried to paint the full picture of, you know, how our season actually unfolded. And with regards to, you know, some people only see the results on the Monday morning. When my name wasn't appearing in the results, you know, they're not going to dive in much further. So I had to really show them the bigger picture. And, you know, as the year went on, I think some of the bosses, the team bosses, started to, you know, sit up and take notice of what was happening under the radar, should we say. Talks progressed further in the second half of last year, and then sort of first, second week in December of last year, it all came to fruition. So, to be fair, it was Abu Dhabi racing that really saved the day, and you know, got this whole team off the ground. And you know, a lot of thanks has to go to Sheikh Khaled Al Qassimi. He was the main instigator of getting the team up and running. So, I'm very thankful for that.
Mm. Just to mention to people that WRC2 is kind of like a step down from the WRC class itself, but you're still running in the World Championship. So, you have World Rally Championship experience, but your first run for your new team, this Citroën outfit, Abu Dhabi Racing, is in Sweden on the snow and ice. That's going to be some baptism, that.
Yeah, look, it's an event that I like. I've done it, I think, 3 times before, so and one time in the World Rally Car. So
that's right, your own Fiesta, yeah.
Yeah, in 2014. So if the conditions are right, it's a really, really enjoyable event. You know, when you've got meter-high snowbanks, temperatures.
Of all the rounds, Craig, I love Sweden. It's a fantastic event.
Yeah, no, it's a real nice spectacle. And for a driver as well, it's one of the nicest events. But the problem is global warming. It's not looking very good for next week. The temperatures are way too high, you know, sort of 4 or 5 degrees.
Wow.
And the roads are melting, so that proves a big problem. And look, we're just going to have to keep an eye on the weather, how it transpires over the next couple of days. But at the moment, the prognosis isn't very good for a clean event, so it's going to be a difficult one, I think.
What's your expectations then next week? How do you think you'll go?
Big question. You know, I've got obviously a lot of responsibility and a lot of pressure on my shoulders to perform, because you know, it's the first time anyone from the 26 counties has got an opportunity quite like this. So I feel like I've the whole country on my shoulders. But
really,
yeah, you know, it's a massive opportunity, and it's something that, you know, I've fought for a long time. So, but look, a lot of people said to me, "Be careful what you wish for," you know, and I've wished for this since I was a kid. So I have to remember that at the same time. But expectations. To show a good progression from start to finish, and to show that I can learn and adapt quickly. Like I said, the conditions are going to be difficult, so that's going to make that task even harder. But if you know, to try and put a figure or a place on it, it's so difficult at the minute because things can change. But I think if I can be in the top 7 or top 8, and you know, try and progress during the event. And I know, you know, to people that are not too familiar with the World of Rally, in 7 or 8 doesn't sound that great, but I'm battling with guys that are, you know, at this with the last 5 or 6 seasons, and I've have so much experience, so I'm the newbie now, and I have to learn my craft. So,
sure, and the old cliche is taking one event at a time. But what's the rest of the season looking for you after Sweden? What's the plans?
The team are going to announce each event on an event by event basis. So I've got a fair idea what I'm going to be doing, but by not announcing the events, the team have the flexibility of changing the drivers and, you know, swapping drivers here and there, because obviously the primary goal for the season is to develop the new car for 2017, because the rules are changing. So they don't want to tie themselves into to have an A driver at, you know, at different events. So it gives them the freedom. But you know, Sweden for sure won't be the last time I'm in the car this year.
No, and obviously a good result. We'll keep that momentum going for you. Craig, it's a realisation of a dream, as you mentioned, to get a full drive like this in the World Rally Championship. We here on Game On wish you the very best of luck, and thanks for joining us.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Game On 2FM. Weekdays from 7.